Theosophical notions of mind are eternal. They can be traced through the roots of all religious philosophies throughout the world. And they go back, mind goes back not to an anatomical study of the brain and the energy generated by the brain, but rather the theosophical study of mind goes back to a notion of life as a force, as spirit. And from that notion of an absolute, infinite, without attribute source of all, from the notion of spiritual unity, emanates, radiates the notion of cosmic mind at the collective, a monad known as spirit, known certainly as heartfelt mind, energy, force. And in the theosophical study, there is the notion of the hermetic roots of the teaching, as above, so below. So from the very ethereal, most universal, most abstract notion we could imagine and hold of cosmic mind, all the way down through the monadic essence that shows in the lower kingdoms, into the duality of spiritual mind in the human state, all of that is a certain degree of oneness, moving from a Laya state of homogeneity to a vitalism, an array of active conscious life in all kingdoms, certainly greatly individualized within the human kingdom. Within the human, there's the possibility of complete control over all the cells and the atoms of the body used in our human state of consciousness. The duality in the human state is said to be one of a higher mind and a lower mind, one absolute monastic monadic essence, but a duality, as there's one hand with two sides to it. In terms of the lower mind, we're thinking about kama monastic essence. In other words, mind as consciousness colored by desire and colored by particularization. This mind, this monastic force, is directed by an eternal self-conscious entity in the human state, frequently called the perceiver, sometimes called the pilgrim, the spiritual pilgrim. But that lower mind, that degree of mind that works most frequently in the physical brain, in the conscious waking state, and is most often conditioned or perhaps colored by motive, by desire, that is the animal side of the animal nature of the anthropoid forms that we use. The faculties that we have at our avail of this monadic mindful essence moving through the animal nature are tools with which we can experience, we can educate, and we can elevate. So what are some of those faculties of lower mind? We certainly, in terms of the focus of mind in the lower aspects, have animal cognition. Instinctive action and force is possible. As was said, there's desire, there's motive that can be generated. There's a degree of mobility, and all of this proceeds from the notion that there's a self-conscious ideation of mind available. We're able to create ideas, we are able to sense and create emotions, motives, mood. We have the faculty of free will and choice. We have the faculty of reason as mind moves through the human state. We can use cold intellect, logic, moving from premise to conclusion. The premise may not always be right, The logic may be a little bit twisted, but we can use our mental faculties in such an exercise. That cognition is frequently based in what's called the I doctrine, in stimulus from the outer world. But we see in the lower mind a degree of fancy, a degree of imagination in use, and we see limited memory being used as well. Recall, recollection, gradually through the use of these faculties, we might begin to experience and develop a gradual sense of deferred gratification, of puzzling and pondering over why are things happening and what's the correct course of action. But above and beyond this lower mind, there's a higher mind with its own faculties, and we'll have a presentation from that aspect.
The mind, manas, is a principle, yet an entity and an individuality. This manas is a god, yet he is doomed to an endless cycle of incarnations. For each, he is made responsible, and for each, he has to suffer. Man functions in this world as a creator. And we are the creators. We do this now. Not mindfully, but we do it. We do it through our thoughts, what we consider, what we are impressed by, and in which direction our thoughts are pointed towards, or elevated to, or cast down to. But through these thoughts, we are as driven to create, to control. The mind is constantly searching, constantly trying to control its environment, to understand the world in which it lives. So this inward driving, or this evolving from within outward, is a concept of this higher mind. Now, see, the personal life is not the permanent world, but it's that world in which we find the root of consciousness, that root which is beyond illusion and dwells in the eternal. That's what we're looking for. That's where, once the higher mind is pointed in that direction, it naturally gravitates towards that. The mind is eternal. It does not die. It's an indestructible thinking entity. That is the divine man. So, how are we to conceive of this? Well, the mind is always searching, always moving, always aware, always. So let us think of it this way. Heterogeneity will always have the upper hand on homogeneity, on this plane of illusion. The nearer an essence is to its root principle, primordial homogeneity, the more difficult it is for the latter to assert itself on Earth. So in that understanding, the mind finds resistance. But once the mind is turned toward the eternal, it no longer sees thought, will, feeling, imagination, and memory in terms of the lower perceptions, the lower mind. There are higher perceptions. There are higher thoughts. Yes, we think reason has set man free, but no, it has imprisoned him because it only goes so far. The power of an unbridled reason is intuition, is knowing, is a perception of that higher realm. Man is a god. We're just going through this life trying to uncover that mask that we have developed around ourselves. So what is this higher consciousness? Well, it's displayed when we are asleep, when the body is paralyzed. There's activity that does not stop. We only register a portion of it or can bring it back into this conscious state. But these are different planes and higher planes of consciousness. Mind is an enigma. It can free man, but it also his prison. The biggest wall we've got to climb is the one built in our minds. You know, this consciousness that we call mind can be trained. And we do that by how we focus our attention. We become the driver of this consciousness by what we are directed to. The Gita shows us how to live our life consciously, to be ever present, that there are only 2 days in the year that nothing can be done. One is called yesterday, the other is called tomorrow. So today is the right day to love, believe, and to mostly live. How do we interact with our mind? Do we? Sure, we all have conversations with it. Sometimes we find ourselves swept away with our conversations. But we are told, bring it back. Bring it back under your control. And you focus on something much larger than ourselves, much grander in its scope. Something more eternal, something more boundless, something that is omnipresent, space. By just doing this simple exercise, we expand our consciousness. Our problem is, as was stated, our lower mind. We're enamored by the world in which we live. We have become lost in this miasma of sensation. And the mind identifies with that which it perceives. So don't be surprised if we have no new thoughts when we keep on doing the same old thing. We have to clear our minds and open up ourselves to what's happening around us. And that's by being present every moment to yourself and to others around you. That it was stated that there's the heart doctrine and the eye doctrine. Well, we live in the eye doctrine, but we can bring that heart doctrine into this world as well. And it's by having compassion. In the words of the Dalai Lama, be kind. Be kind. So the mind can be kind when it's not separated or feeling separate. The universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. How do we realize that fact? The mind is that bridge between matter and spirit. Yeah, just point it in the right direction. Well, that's a short presentation of our higher mind. One that we have sort of lost contact with. We have not had that conversation with that which is permanent in us. We are so caught up in the activity of the lower mind, we have forgotten our true nature, that voice of the silence. Can we be quiet and watch our thoughts, watch the world around us, and be quiet and listen? You know, our mind wants to be in control. It's an entity. It can when it's directed toward its true nature, not when it's directed toward its separate and illusionary nature. That will disappear. Our higher nature will not. So why are we spending so much time working on something that will disappear? And if we want to build a stronger tomorrow, live in that tomorrow. Live for tomorrow. Live for all of life, and we cannot separate ourselves from it. Well, the purpose here is not to give us information, but just words of encouragement. Because if you do not think about this, it doesn't mean anything. You are a monastic being, but there's something that stands above that. That is the witness to all the changing fantasies that we see. So, how do we make the mind permanent? By living in the eternal. So we'll just stop there and we'll open it up for questions about the mind, its functions, its thought, will, feeling, imagination, and memory. We focus it how? Are we the builder or are we the destroyer?
We have two hands up, TK first and then SL.
The statement we've made, the mind is directed by an eternal self-conscious entity in the human state. It almost makes us think that we're not our mind, but yet we often hear that we're mind beings. How do we make the distinction? Are we not the mind?
I think what we need to differentiate, we use the mind. We are not the mind. We use the mind. The mind, if led on its own, will be directed in the direction it's pointed, either up or down or sideways. That there is something that directs that mind, that is beyond that mind. We are asked to find that. Now, we have often heard the word the witness, the observer. Well, that's not devoid of mind, but that is beyond mind. That is mind on its highest level. That is mind when infused with buddhi. For Atma, only shoots its ray into matter. It cannot enter. It enters as buddhi. And mind in its highest state is infused with buddhi. So we are mind beings, but we are not the mind. We are more than the mind.
SL, your hand was up.
To follow up on the previous question, then the mind being is that immortal pilgrim. But when it incarnates, apparently from what has been said, it becomes dual. It remains the immortal pilgrim, but an aspect of itself incarnates. And is that aspect we call the mind or the lower mind. But this term lower and higher, aren't they just relative terms? I mean, doesn't the lower mind have the same potential faculties as the higher, since it is an aspect of it?
When we're considering the puzzle of unity and diversity, the whole notion that there is one spiritual source of all, and that radiating, emanating from that is a spirit life force culminating with a marriage of mind in the human state. There's a oneness to all that, and we can use the analogy of water to say to ourselves, is it not true that water, whether it's in an incredibly saline situation like the deep ocean, whether it's brackish as it comes up a vehicle like the Delaware River from the bay, whether it's fresh water once it's in inland and in the air and throughout the hydrologic cycle, there's a oneness to water. There's one notion, one concept, one reality, but there are gradations, if you will, of that manifestation of what it is to be water. And so too with mind. Mind is, it is a reflective, self-conscious entity working through physical substance of all so many degrees. It is a bridge with the spiritual oneness, the true source of all. But mind is something that takes on the form, if you will, or takes on the substance or the concept, the conditioning of where it's placed. And therefore we say it can be high or low. The faculties remain, but they can be used for universal or particularized functions.
Now, even though we operate on this physical plane, we need something to get it, come in contact with it. So this mind, when it does, mind is like, it takes on the shape of that which it perceives. So as mind has become confused, that it thinks that it is these lower attributes. So what we see happening is because of it is a mind that it is transmuted, or it is transmuted by the higher. We see that in most of the writings, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to transmute this lower mind into aspects of the higher mind. And we see that being talked about in terms of the mind gaining control of the lower faculties, of one's desires and one's passions, and becoming the master of his house rather than the servant. So in the lower mind can be transmuted into higher qualities or higher perceptions and a higher life. I think it is said that we keep on coming back and back and back, life after life, to this earth to raise up all of matter. To raise up all of matter. Not, you know, that matter is life. Everything is life. So our greatness is not completely understood. You know, the fact that we are eternal beings. You know, we're talking about mind like it's an abstract. No, it's us. This is how we're using it now. We are these minds. We are these eternal beings. We are. But the fact is, we don't believe it, or we don't believe it enough to live.
There's a wonderful quote by Robert Crosby about the apparent duality of mind. The doctrine of the I is of brain consciousness, largely composed of external impressions. The doctrine of the heart is of the spiritual consciousness of the ego, not perceived by the brain. Consciousness until right thought and right action attune certain centers in the brain to accord with spiritual vibration. So if we take faculties like memory, memory is a faculty of mind. It's a power that we have. From the I doctrine point of view, from the quote lower mind point of view, memory has to be gathered. We have to try to recollect what happened. There could be a searching of triggers, memory triggers of senses of one state into another. Whereas memory from the spiritual, from the heart doctrine, from spiritual consciousness, is called reminiscence, and it pertains to direct cognition. It's not something that's searched in the external, among the external stimuli. It's not something that's searched through a physical brain, but that memory, reminiscence, is something that is a direct cognition and can come flooding in. It might be something that we bring back from the deep sleep state. It might be a reminiscence of eternal verities learned far, far and away from where we are now.
Yes, and memory can be our salvation, because it's said over and over again that deep impacted with the nature of all human beings are these eternal truths. So what in our memory can we trigger to recognize that in this life? Well, perhaps it's that abstract contemplation of space, of vastness. You know, who knows what will trigger that memory of compassion? Who knows what thought will trigger the release of that which is eternal? But we are told again and again that the answers lie within our very nature. We have to trust that and just keep on looking.
SL?
At the beginning of our meeting, the idea was mentioned of maintaining an atmosphere of impersonality. And we were wondering if that's because we're in this, for at least for this period of time, we're giving each other the opportunity to exercise the higher faculties of mind. Because we don't usually do that because our minds are so much involved in personality, in the conditioned aspects of ourselves and others. So impersonality is a faculty of the higher mind which we can exercise.
Yeah, and we think that by practicing that, we avail ourselves more opportunity to understand this philosophy, which will free us.
There's a wonderful statement in the Declaration that everyone who's in the true service of humanity is welcome. That in ULT, there's no condition of sex, creed, race, age, background of any kind. All of those are said to be distractors. And we can test this out for ourselves if we realize that we're very visual in the way the physical body responds to stimulus, and that the least little bit of motion or facial expressions can distract the mind totally and put it on a different subject. The monkey mind can be knocked right off course and therefore can become destructive to the effort, the motive to stay concentrated. So impartiality, impersonality, trying our best to ignore all visual stimulus and to focus on ideas to help each other for a period of time like this morning, meditate together. For what else are we doing? We are, each of us, motivated to focus our minds on a particular subject together, to think about the ideas and aspects of the faculties of mind together, to see the variation and potential and not be distracted by the little visuals that we see on screen, or not be distracted by the circumstances in our physical environments, but rather to step beyond and above that conditioning to something loftier. A chat has come in. For how long could one maintain one pointedness of mind before being present for another becomes the greater priority? again, for how long could one maintain one-pointedness of mind before being present for another becomes the greater priority?
Well, doesn't that one-pointedness of mind have its focus in the other person? You know, one-pointedness of mind is not about oneself. It's not a selfish pursuit. Being single-minded could mean compassion for that other being, so that we are present for that other being, either by listening or by being empathetic, by being compassionate. So that single-mindedness is a pursuit that we have with everything that we engage in, I would think.
SL?
During one of the talks, the expression was used that the mind being is doomed to an endless series of incarnations. And it brings up the question, is why is it doomed? Is it doomed because of some outside force or being, or is it doomed through the exercise of its own faculties that dooms it or liberates it?
The notions of doom, fatalism, predestination all fly in the face of the teachings of the philosophy of theosophy. In this particular philosophy, the premise is offered that there is karma and reincarnation, twin doctrines, and that as dynamos, as spiritual dynamos, spiritual entities using mind to generate force, using desire to generate will, if you will, we can bring about tremendous changes. And as we choose to focus and to use one-pointedness, we create causes. We create causes in every thought, word, action, in every aspect of habit that we can envision. And it is in that creative moment, in that force, that we, quote, doom ourselves to future incarnations. If we're attached to the fruits of our actions, if we are harboring even the tiniest whiff of selfishness, of us versus them, then we have lessons to learn. And we have the need for more opportunity to experience, to educate, to elevate. And so in that way, through our desires and attachments, through our lack of practice of detaching and becoming impersonal, we doom ourselves to be locked into this wheel of karma and reincarnation. But there's no outside force, and that's not inevitable. It is something definitely that the use of quote, higher mind faculties can overcome.
Yeah, and we find ourselves now where we are, and so what do we do to change? How do we get out of this rut that we are, this groove that we have made? And yes, TK.
Well, if the question is, how do we get out of this rut? Step one is admitting to yourself that you're in a rut. And that's probably a pretty good start. And these ruts, if it's the kind of ruts we're thinking of, it's ruts that are formed by the way that we think. And it could be that we're thinking wrong, or it could be that we're stuck in a way of thinking that is right if we apply it in certain situations, but we get attached to that way of thinking, and it's wrong if we don't apply it, or we try to apply it in other situations where it's not appropriate. So we have to be flexible. We have to stand back from our own thoughts. That's the idea of we're not the mind, we use the mind. If we're lazy about it, then the mind stays in its own rut, and we have to kind of till the soil and make some changes.
It's an excellent point. What is fundamentalism in any area of thought? What is fundamentalism among thought leaders, but a lockstep uniformity of thought that's become rigid, that's become brittle, that's become like a rut, and eventually becomes like insanity. Insanity is repeating the same practice over and over again, expecting different results. And so absolutely, the ability to be aware, to be self-conscious, introspective, creative thinkers, and to be open-minded, open-hearted, so that our experiences add to our lore, add to the knowledge of one and all on the way to progressing to be eternal verities or wisdom. SL?
To follow up on that, the problem with fundamentalism seems to be that we are applying limited ideas to all situations.
Yes.
Because we've had expressed the three fundamentals of theosophy. So that's a kind of fundamentalism. The difference is we're applying universal principles to all situations. So the faculty of fundamentalism seems to be part of the mind. It's just how we are using that faculty, whether we are limiting it or we are expanding it by the ideas we consider.
Indeed. Wouldn't it be a crazy world if we were all measuring everything with rubber rulers and we were constantly changing our notions of what's a verity, what's morality, what's truth? But rather, if we sustain the notion of a golden rule, something that is a sturdy premise that we are now using to measure circumstances and to see, does this work in all circumstances? When is it inappropriate, if ever? How is it inappropriate, if ever? So that creative force of thought is this abstract, absolute motion of consciousness, of this constant intaking and outgoing, this process of assimilation, this process of being aware in the moment, and then filtering so that we can keep the wheat and discard the chaff. It takes practice. It's ongoing. It certainly is all-encompassing if we allow it to be. Never rigid, never brittle, never dictatorial, not stifling, but something quite different. SL?
Well, it seems that we see that abstract motion, even in the mind, the lower mind, because it's continuously moving. It's jumping around from one thing to another, to what we like and what we don't like. Our memory is constantly taken up with it. So if it's constantly moving, control of the mind does not mean we stop it, but rather we have to redirect that motion. So the idea of repressing is not part of the theosophical doctrine of elevating the mind or controlling it.
An interesting study of the philosophy along those lines is that little inspirational handbook, Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. Meditation as understood in the light of theosophy, is not stifling all thought. It is not submissive passivity, blankness of a slate. That's not it. It is the active, critical, creative process of watching the mind flow and turning it back again to a one-pointed, in the moment, literal, mindful moment. And certainly in the voice and other places in the inspiration writings, there's notions of getting beyond the mundane, getting beyond this monkey mind flow of ideas that's incessant. But first, as a commenter just said, we have to admit, we have to be aware that we're in that rut of motion before we can begin to refocus, to harmonize, to free ourselves in a different use of mind and its faculties.
Yeah, we came across this quotation is that a meditation is the journey from sound to silence, from movement to stillness, from a limited identity to unlimited space. And meditation takes place when you're not there.
Can you clarify that last little statement? When are we not there as mind beings?
No self-identifying attachment.
Okay. Interesting quote.
A chat.
There are two chats, actually. Mindfulness is key, being in the moment. And then the second chat from another is, through silence, we can begin to hear that still small voice within. Conscience. The voice of conscience, the voice of silence, that intuition, so much a faculty of the highest use of mind.
Yes. SL.
We think that that last chat contribution points out that with the faculties of mind, we have a spiritual hearing, and we have a hearing that's connected with the senses, we'll put it that way. Because how can we hear the voice of the silence if we're not exercising that spiritual faculty of hearing inherent to the mind? And yet we have to make our minds dull, or deaf, if you want to say, to the sounds of the world. To the sounds of our imagination, to the sounds of our the memories that go through our mind. So even in that quote or that contribution, we see how the faculties of the mind to sense can have a higher and a lower aspect.
Mm-hmm. There's a quote by Rumi, the Sufi poet. Your prison is your mind, and your mind is your habit.
Right.
Break the pattern and live in the moment. So one mind, creating habit, creating conditioning, you break that to live in the moment.
Well, I think that this is a habit. On Sunday mornings is a habit. On Friday evenings, it's a habit. And on Wednesday evening, it's a habit. And I think we all should be aware that we are making habits here, and that we are training the mind to focus at least on these three times of the week to try to elevate it to a higher perspective. It's I think we all can say we can be more ourselves with like-minded people, and that the impersonality and the ability to accept each other for as we are, not as our mind would want you to be. It's you know, the mind is we had a quote here to end this, that the mind in its desire to know, to understand and control, mistakes its opinions and viewpoint for the truth. So I think we all have to be aware that we may be mind beings, but we can control that mind by directing it to our higher nature. So please remember our association again on Wednesday evenings at 7:30 to 8:45 in the Ocean of Theosophy, where we're talking about, what are we talking about? Reincarnation? Are we just
karma? Reincarnation.
And that has a lot to do with the mind.
After death cycles.
Thank you, TK.
And there's something to think about. And then on Friday, we are taking Mr. Wadia again at 5:15. So we enjoyed seeing everyone and hearing everyone. And we invite you to join us again. Peace be with us.
Thanks, everybody.